Okay, our next speaker is Dr. John Lee Cox on partnering with commercial ornamental growers to implement sensor-based irrigation control.
Thank you, George, and thank you for the invite to be a part of this. For those of you who don't know, and a shout out to my collaborators on this project, it's a very big project. It involves five different universities, including University of Georgia. It's Mark Van Eersel, Matthew Chappell, John Rutter, Paul Thomas, Bill Bowley at Colorado State, Taryn Bowley at Cornell. We've got some engineers at Carnegie Mellon, huge number of graduate students who've contributed to this work over time. So I wanted to just, even though it's just my name on the slide here, I definitely wouldn't have had enough space to put everybody's name on it. So a shout out to them, because this is really a culmination of the work that we've all done. I wanted to just take a step back, because I think obviously we've been working primarily in ornamental production environments, and for those of you who are not familiar with the wide range of those production environments, I'll just give you a quick pictorial overview of that. A couple of slides on the big picture, because that's always one of the drivers for us. We are irrigated. We don't have much alternative except in field production. Why sensor networks? We'll cover that. And what I really wanted to spend the majority of my time on, though, was three specific case studies, particularly from focusing in on the economics, because it's not necessarily the price of water that's driving these decisions for folks. So for those of you who are not familiar, we grow ornamental tree species and even shrubs in soil-based systems. Fairly intensive. We also grow in what this is a kind of a hybrid system. It's called a pot and pot operation, where we're growing fairly large material in typically 10, 15, 25, even up to 45-gallon containers. Very dense, and these pots are in the ground primarily for two primary reasons: winter kill on root balls. But in many areas, just literally to prevent wind blowover. This is probably the most familiar production environment for many of you in terms of ornamentals. All I can say for these production systems, in one word, chaotic. They are very intensive, typically production area limited, and growers just jam some operations for 500 different species of plants in very limited areas. And so obviously irrigating with any degree of efficiency is a challenge. This is an overhead irrigation type of system. The actual irrigators on these houses are right up at the top here. So we have all sorts of challenges in terms of not only interception efficiency. Richard Beeson at University of Florida has done some excellent work on canopy interception, and so there's all stem flow and canopy shedding, and it's quite frankly a mess out there. And then we also deal with a very large across the gamut in terms of greenhouse production, ranging from, this is one producer that we work with, who's a cut flower snapdragon producer, closed system hydroponic in perlite, was in bags, now in trays. But we also deal with flood floors, we deal with, you know, poinsettias on ebb and flow benches, we deal with boom sprayers. So we're pretty much, I think in our industry, I think we're probably covering just about every single irrigation system you could ever dream up. Of course, the big picture is, California is in the world of hurt at the moment. Most farmers did not get a water allocation in San Joaquin Valley this year. So they do not have water. Simply as that. So there's a lot of fallow land out there. Part of that issue is of course transport of water from northern Florida and northern California. For southern California, of course, it's most of that's water that's coming down the Colorado River, and so it's influenced by snowpack. So I think a lot of people are focused on changing climate. Of course, the climate always changes. It's just the speed at which it does it. But for us, we're blessed this year, as you can see, on the East Coast, pretty no drought, just a little bit in southern northern Tennessee there, southern Virginia. But by and large, we're in a water-rich area. However, there's nothing to say that we don't get periodic droughts, and typically most years we are dealing with dry conditions, typically from August, September, October. Those are our drier periods in Maryland, at least. But sometimes those droughts can extend for whole years, and we've been through many of those cycles. The last one, last big one we had was in 2009. Something that a lot of people just don't have any idea of is our deficit in freshwater withdrawals. This is from USGS. This is actually quite dated numbers, 2000 numbers. But we are mining water, basically. The Ogallala is a case study in that in the Midwest. Nobody quite knows how big that is, but the drawdown on the Ogallala is quite terrifying, and considering it's 10,000 year old water, it's a pretty finite resource. So this is a situation in many areas of the country. Of course, we are blessed, certainly in the Delmarva area, with fairly good recharge from the Poconos. We've got a number of aquifers, but in many areas the recharge rates on aquifers are way, way less, way slower than we are using at the present time. So I just wanted to thank George and Bob for their very good overview of the basics. I could call this Maslow's law of irrigation needs, but basically what they have done is really covered quantity, quality, and perhaps efficiency in terms of design. Obviously, if you don't have a irrigation system that is designed well and operates well, a sensor network is not going to do anything for you. The only money you should spend on an irrigation system is literally making sure that irrigation operates as efficiently as possible and is as well designed as possible. And unfortunately, many of our irrigation systems in the ornamental industry are very poorly designed. And many of them were initially very well designed, and then it's like the old farmhouse, right? You just add on another block, right, or another room, and then you suddenly find out your main line, which was 4 inches and was perfectly adequate for those first few blocks, is totally inadequate now because you've got 8 blocks. Okay, so ripping out main lines and doing all of that, it's the old farmhouse, right? Unfortunately, that's when efficiency declines in those blocks, and particularly when you've got long laterals, right? And so it's amazing how many farmers have no concept of the relationship between flow and pressure. Simple as that. And so they don't get the basics, and so unfortunately, if we don't have good people designing these systems, it's very tough to actually design these things well yourself. So what we are... The situation that we were in Maryland when I first came in, and I've been in Maryland for 18 years now, is surprising how time flies. But I think what I've learned is what we really are focused on is water in Maryland, and we surround the Chesapeake Bay, and that was basically why I was hired as a nursery extension specialist, was to really help farmers with nutrient management. And the key for nutrient management in our game, in our business, is water management. Water is the transport molecule. And so if we don't get a handle on water efficiency and being able to apply water efficiency, we're never going to get a handle on nutrient management. Simple as that. Doesn't matter whether it's controlled-release fertilizers, which is a complete misnomer because there's nothing controlled about controlled-release fertilizer because most of them are temperature-based. And so in containers, when you've got 140 Fahrenheit temperatures on a nice toasty day in summer, that's basically uncontrolled release. So a lot of this is focused on water, but there's a cascade of management decisions as well as resource use efficiencies and, quite frankly, economic costs that are all embedded in this decision. And so this is just a kind of a graphic that I've really tried to, you know, we're dealing with large operations, very often overhead irrigation because they're very dense, like that container nursery I showed you. How do you irrigate efficiently without reducing and reduce runoff and nutrient runoff at the same time? So many of our producers cannot go to drip. They're just too dense and they have, you know, a million plants in their operation. So we need to figure out a better way to do this. Of course, irrigation decisions are easy, right? Simple, yes, no. Do I need to irrigate? Yes. No. So, well, unfortunately, it's not. It's an easy thing to flip the switch, and unfortunately that's what most of our growers do. They flip the switch. All right. So it's just literally a time-based decision. I've got so much water, I've got so many blocks, and I've got to irrigate them in this period, and that's what I do, because that's the only way that I can really think to manage my system. Some of our more advanced growers will actually go around. They will check their indicator species, and they will knock plants out of pots, and they will use a very good sensor to do that, right? Well, it's better than holding it in the wind. At least you stick it in the dirt, right? But it's very subjective. Of course, a lot of experienced growers actually use much more subtle indicators. They look, they'll look at color changes on leaves, and of course, that's typically, you know, you might lose some sheen on a leaf. That's your leaf hairs flagging. So if you see those leaf hairs flagging, that color change in the middle of the day, you know, a good irrigator will assimilate a lot of information to make an irrigation decision. Unfortunately, most of our farmers, as you know, are time limited, and they don't have enough time to get around all of their crops all of the time every day. And unfortunately, in our industry, many of the irrigation decisions are not being done. They're being done by people who are being paid $8 an hour, if they're lucky, $10 an hour. And so they don't have the educational background, and they don't have the knowledge and experience that an experienced grower would have. The last thing is, you know, bad decisions, unfortunately, are cumulative. It's all compound interest. So I think what we've learned to try and do is shift the dialogue forward and give growers their own information. Because what I've learned in 18 years is if you can actually give somebody their own information, they will change practice. They're very smart about making decisions, and they will make good economic decisions, and they will see that. But unfortunately, I can stand there and I can tell them what Joe's doing down the road, and it's like, yeah, well, that's Joe. I do better than Joe, right? So, you know, there's this disconnect between what they do and what Joe is doing. That's been the driving force behind trying to move forward on implementation of systems that will be cost effective, but yes, will give them this information. So we started off this project with some very global goals in terms of, you know, what technology can we use, what's cost effective, but more importantly, how do we translate that information? And we can collect an awful lot of data, but how do you collect that data and translate that data into information, firstly, which you can actually see and can visualize within 3 or 4 minutes, right, with a cup of coffee, but more importantly, then take that information and translate it into knowledge, because it's the knowledge you need to make a good decision. And so you've got it's a continuum between data, information, and knowledge, and then you get to change practice. Okay, so that's really what we've tried to do. Of course, the challenge was how to do that cost effectively. So we started with sensor nodes. There's a number of operators out there and various good products out there. There's lots of sensors out there as well. We, as George and Bob alluded to, we could have done tensiometers, but unfortunately tensiometers have a pretty bad rap in our industry because they just don't work well in soil substrates. You lose the contact with soil moisture in the pot very quickly. Unless you've got a very good tensiometer that's well bedded in, it just takes an inordinate amount of time to manage it and to maintain it. And so they quickly have, they've never really been adopted by our nursery growers. They have been adopted in some cases by our greenhouse growers. Again, there's also telemetry. We're thinking, we're very focused on time and how we can actually really get the data to somebody's computer and condense that information without them even having to think about it. Because if we can do that, we felt at least if they could sit down in front of a computer, look at that data, it's their own data, and make that decision, then at least we were getting some way along the way. Just to describe, so I will show you some pictures of nodes. We've got various types of nodes. This is basically just a little wireless device that actually collects and transmits data from sensors. You can hook all sorts of sensors up to them. We've developed as part of our project a control-capable node. And then basically what that does is it transmits data. You can do that to either to a local computer. We do have some nodes that Decagon has developed that are actually are 3G, so those just go straight up to the cloud through the cellular network, and those go to a cloud-based server. We can pull that information down from the cloud as well, basically into a program which is kind of does this portion of the information provision. And we've developed a program called SensorWeb, which I'll show you. In. So we can the one thing that I wanted to just point out is these nodes can actually be basically configured to make local independent controls. And we've one of the primary things that our growers wanted it was to be able to dislocate the power requirements. So these actually will work out in the field, and they are independent of power, and more importantly, these nodes will actually control a DC latching solenoid. And so that sensor-driven irrigation can now control irrigation independent of running miles and miles and miles of copper wire. So that was a big decision for our growers, because they were suddenly getting away from the whole two-line fixed-based systems. And that means that we're adaptable, we're reconfigurable, you can put these nodes out in a block, you can learn about that particular species, and you can pick them up and you can move them elsewhere. So being able to use a scalable system, but something that can be reconfigurable, and you can make a small investment but use it in a number of different situations was very important to us as well. We can use global control. I probably, if anybody's interested in global control, I'll tell them about it later. It's just a bit more sophisticated way that we can actually control irrigation. This is the node. You can see these downstairs. But basically, they're battery operated. First question we often get from farmers is, okay, so how often do I need to change the batteries? Well, I can honestly tell you, you will not have to change the batteries within 6 months. If you are taking data at less than 15 minutes, so for example, a weather station that you're taking data every 5 minutes or every 1 minute resolution, you might have to change the batteries after 6 months. Typically in the field, though, we change these batteries once in about early March, and they are good for the rest of the year. And that is the same on the control node as well. And so they have very good power management capabilities. So they're not only taking data, transmitting data, but they're also controlling irrigations on 5 batteries. It's the engineers did a pretty nice job on this. Good thing is we can integrate a whole range of sensors, not only soil-based sensors, which are along the top here, there's various flavors and types, but environmental sensors. So we typically install a weather station because there's an awful amount of useful information that you can get from microclimatic weather information. Grower degree days, chill hours, daily light integral, if you know what that means. Vapor pressure deficit, which is a very hard one for me between temperature and relative humidity. I can never estimate vapor pressure deficit. Rain gauges, inline pressure transducers, PAR sensors, all sorts of things. They really do a nice job at integrating many of these sensors into that one particular tool. So moving on, just to show you the some of the software components, because hardware is one thing, but software is where we really unleash the capability of these sensors of these systems to really be able to transmit information. And so, okay, I just called up a site. This is live, so I can literally just go into this particular. This is actually This is not a farm. This is actually a green roof at NASA Johnson, which we've instrumented. And so I can literally click on that node and I can tell you exactly what the soil moisture is on that particular part of the roof. We also have a weather station here. And so it's not just farms. We're also doing it for environmental urban areas as well. In this particular case, this is Halen Hines, Terry Hines down in McMinnville, Tennessee. We started working with Terry in Tennessee and is like, well, I'm in Maryland, so this was a challenge right off the bat because we had to do that real-time telemetry and kind of get him to the point. I could afford to maybe travel there once or twice a year with Brooke Villania, who's sitting at the back of the room. And Brooke's been fantastic at being able to manage the situation as well as do some of the integration and actually demonstration. But basically what we did very early on, about 3 or 4 years ago, we started setting up some nodes in what we call indicator species. And Terry is a very good irrigator. He actually has a two-core irrigation, two-line system. He's completely wired, and he's a good irrigator. He knows how to irrigate a red maple, and he's very tuned in. He makes good decisions, and he works hard at it, and it takes him a lot of time. But basically what this is showing is his farm, and we've got these nodes out in a couple of his blocks. This is SensorWeb itself. So this is the program. You can go in, you can do all sorts of things, look at charts, and actually look in at each one of these individual nodes. And you can also schedule irrigation. So at the bottom, this is the scheduling tool. So what we have is a macro scheduling tool. We're using these nodes to actually drive his own irrigation decisions. And I'll describe the results of that in a little bit. But basically what we can do is we can actually go in through this internet portal, and I can literally go in and drill down, go to that particular node, and I can change the irrigation configuration on that node, update the node, and I'm doing that from Maryland. And so it's implementing that decision down in Tennessee. I don't particularly like to do that. I like to leave it in Terry's hands. So there's always a dialogue when we're doing stuff like this. But basically, what we first did is we actually did a demonstration. And so Terry was actually, I'll describe that in a slide. But basically what he was doing was monitoring his own block. And we were doing one control row. And I'll show you the results of that. We also have what we call a micropulse control, and this is probably where the software has been the greatest saver of water for us, because it means that with a container, some of these containers are only 2-3 gallons, and so they're a small container, and so what we've got to do is pulse the water on, because if you ran more than a minute of irrigation, that water is, just like Bob showed, is out the root zone and it's gone. It's gone. So this allows us to do a micropulse where we can literally go from a 10-second pulse, anything up to a 3-minute pulse, to be able to actually just control that. And that sensor then turns the system off after that, and it just monitors. If it comes up to the set point, then it will turn off completely. If not, it'll put another pulse on, and I'll show you some data a little bit about that as well. So this is Terry Hine. Terry Hines, he was the part picture that I showed you. He does standard micro emitters. They're net FM emitters on each tree. And he basically uses a two-core, as I mentioned, and he's programmable, and so he has the capability to do very good precision irrigation anyway. What he first started doing, though, when we first started working with him, he was using a 6-minute pulse, just like Bob showed with his growers. It's like nobody knew. It's like you're under plastic. Well, he's in a pot. You have no idea. I mean, he's in a pot and pot, so he's below ground, right? So he's not seeing the water coming out of the pot. The first thing that we did when we started working with him, we quickly worked out, probably within a couple of months, is that we could cut that irrigation duration from 6 minutes to 3 minutes, and he was doing exactly the same as anything he'd ever done before. So we immediately saved 50% of his water. And I'll show you the numbers for his water, but this guy is pumping about 50 acre feet per year on 200 acres. So we've learned a couple of things as general rules. So firstly, species. We've been able to differentiate between different species and indicator species. And that, of course, is important for us because we are growing trees which are very slow growing. They use little water, but we're basically irrigating them exactly the same way as trees that are using a lot of water. I mentioned reducing durations. Very often these guys are irrigating 3, 4, 5 times a day. So what we learned is where we're really saving the water is not only on the alley and just with each literally each drip irrigation, so cutting it from 6 minutes to 3 minutes, but when we're doing that daily, what we're learning is that actually irrigation is much more important in the afternoon for these guys than it is in the morning. There's a lot more heat in the day, and there's and these guys tend to stop irrigating earlier than they should, and that means that your tree goes into water is going into deficit in the latter part of the day. And we're conserving a lot of water on seasonal decisions, spring and fall. Terry's doing a very good job during summer. He's really attuned to it. Spring and fall, it kind of all goes out the window because it's cooler. It's hard to know what that tree is using, and so we typically are over irrigating at that time. So this was the initial. What we did with him, we went in and we actually just irrigated this control row, just a single row, because I wasn't going to mess with a whole block of trees. But what we did is we basically just implemented this little simple system where we had one node on this row, another node on this row, monitoring 5 trees in each of these rows and giving them an average, and then basically we were driving the irrigation from Maryland on a set point with his control row, and he was just carrying on with his standard practice. So this was his monitoring. Sorry, it's a bit faint there, but you could probably tell that he's irrigating 3 to 4 cyclic irrigations per day. The nice thing that we were very happy to do was integrate a flow meter. He loves his flow meter data because it gives him instant gratification and he uses it for fault control. So it's interesting when you've got leaking pipes in a block, particularly if you've got it on a main line, you can actually get some interesting information about that. So what we did is basically demonstrated that this irrigation increases over the season, and this sensor-based irrigation actually controls as the tree leafs out and grows, and it was actually automatically controlling the irrigation based on the sensors, and it did a very nice job. Bottom line is, this was the shoulder data. So this is actually dogwood, a slow growing species, and you can see that our savings were about it's mostly in the middle part of this time period, but this was maple, and you can see that our savings paralleled kind of what he was applying, but we did save a lot more water certainly in early spring here. This is the differential. So I'll skip over this. What we're doing is basically integrating this small control block. Now we've got a small control block where we're monitoring 8 species, and we're using this control capability to now drive decisions through the SensorWeb computer, integrating it with his two-core controller, and so these decisions are now driving irrigation over the 200 plus acres of this operation. And what we've got is little monitoring nodes out at the ends of the laterals of each production block, where we're actually now monitoring the actual irrigation control decisions. So that's where we are at this point. Just wanted to just make a quick point about cost, because it's very small. I hope it comes out in the recording. But basically, this system, it was a big node system for him. It's about 25 nodes. It's about $45,000 in total total cost. This included the installation as well. We amortized that over 3 years to give about $14,000 to $15,000 per year on the cost. What I really wanted to show you, though, is this data here. This is his actual pumping cost. 17 cents a 1,000 gallons. That's because he pumps out of a perennial stream at the base of his property, and his only cost is pumping cost. He does not pay for water. However, if you translated these, and so his return on investment was about 2.7 years on that, so about a break even on that actual cost for the basic save water savings. Of course, he's saving a lot of time in management, but as soon as you increase the cost of water, now in Washington area, our cost of water, city water, is $3.23. In California, the cost of water at this time of the year, if you can get it, is about $7 to $8 a thousand gallons. And this was published in Eric Lichtenberg. This is Brooks' paper in Hort Technology in December. You can download it there. But basically, the return on investment of this system under those pricing at $3 a thousand gallons drops down to about a 4-month return on investment. Just to show you the plasticity of water. Very quickly, just to finish up, a couple of other quick case studies. This was work that Matthew Chappell and Mark Vignesel did at McCorkle Nurseries in Georgia. This was with a very problematic crop, gardenia, very disease prone. And so what they did is they did very similar things to what we did at Terry Hines. They implemented control technology, sensor technology at McNeil Farm, which is a very big container operation in southern Georgia. Preliminary study where they demonstrated a lot of water savings, particularly impacts on weekend watering when it didn't get done. And so what they basically showed is that they could show they actually applied about 83% less water in this particular study. More importantly, with this data, what they demonstrated is they had about a 30% loss of gardenia due to disease with this particular previous irrigation cycle. And so what they did with this particular study, again it's published in that same series, Hort Technology, is they collapsed the production time down from 14 months down to 9 months. And it was that collapse in production time that basically allowed them to get to a somewhat astounding 156% increase in net revenue. Now that was not just the reduction in that 30% loss, but it was also the increase in production, decrease in production time, because it allowed them to actually now flip that space on an annual basis rather than a 14 or 18 month basis. Very quickly, we're also just working with a grower in cut flower growers I mentioned in Maryland, much of the same stuff, just more intensive. What we're doing is sensing Charles's operation in hydroponics. I just wanted to focus in on this one slide with the micropulse, because this shows exactly what the utility of the system is for Charles. Charles is not interested in making irrigation decisions. He wants a system that will basically run on autopilot, and this is what the micropulse does on a daily basis. This is just a one day out of SensorWeb, where it just shows you, you put on a pulse based on his set point. His set point is based on these three or four sensors in his bags, and basically it pulses on right at the beginning of the morning, gives another double pulse there, brings that average soil moisture up adequately, so it skips a pulse. And then, obviously, it's going through the day, the plants are beginning to transpire, it then goes into, he's basically scheduled this for an hourly irrigation, if it wants to irrigate. So it typically irrigates, it kind of skipped an irrigation here, but then in the afternoon it did a number of double pulse, and then it backed off. And then what he wants to do is he wants to dry his crop out at the end of the day. Anyway, what we've demonstrated with his data and Eric has done is that he's got lots good returns on investment pre and post sensor, and bottom line is this system is also making him money. And I'll leave it with that. Thank you.